Herod, as we shall see, had certain achievements, but he lacked any of the spiritual or moral qualities necessary for greatness, and he committed too many moral horrors to ever approximate greatness for the Talmud. Meanwhile, Hillel became great indeed, reflecting a greatness that went hand in hand with his humility, and indeed was founded upon it. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 61. Enter Hillel. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is one of the most cited Talmudic tales, but also one of the most misunderstood. One which occurred during the time period of the rabbinic successors of Shemaiah and Avtalion, who were known as Hillel and Shammai. The rabbis report that once a Gentile approached Shammai, Hillel's colleague, and asserted that he would convert to Judaism if Shammai could summarize the entire Torah, while he, the Gentile, stood on one foot. This, of course, was not a very respectful way to speak, and Shammai chased the impertinent inquirer away. The Gentile then approached Hillel, who agreed to the challenge. And as this prospective convert stood on one foot, Hillel succinctly stated, "Ma'adasani lach lo tavid lechavre, what is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow," adding, "This is the entire Torah, ve'idach perusha zil gmor, the rest is its commentary, go and learn it." This is Hillel, as he was called by the Talmud, humble and slow to anger. And the story reflects Hillel's own maxim in Pirkei Avot, "Be among the students of Aaron, loving peace, pursuing peace, loving human beings, and bringing them close to the Torah." Today, however, the story is at times misinterpreted. Hillel is portrayed as a sort of non-judgmental postmodernist for whom the entire Torah is only love your neighbor and contains no dogma or doctrine. But this, of course, is not in any way accurate. Hillel is important to us today because he issued any number of halachic decisions. And while other sages may have disagreed with him, the norm of law follows Hillel and his students. Hillel, in other words, is the ultimate authority for Jewish tradition when it comes to what we are obligated to do. Hillel was a rabbinic authority and also reflected an utterly inspiring humility, founding a family whose influence was immense in Jewish history. And his arrival in Jerusalem to study Torah portended the means through which the Jewish faith would survive the turbulent years of Roman persecution that were yet to come. We saw yesterday how, according to Josephus, the young Herod, having ruled violently in the Galilee, was summoned before the Sanhedrin in Jerusalem, but was allowed to escape by Hyrcanus, the Hasmonean high priest and ethnarch prince in the city. Hyrcanus, who was under the sway of Antipater, Herod's father. We further saw how, in Josephus' account, Herod and his armed entourage was fearlessly confronted by a sage of the Sanhedrin named Sameas, which, drawing on the scholar Louis Feldman, we identified as possibly Shemaiah, who led Pharisaic Judaism along with his colleague Avtalion. It was the intellectual fame of Shemaiah and Avtalion that attracted a man from faraway Babylon, whose own influence became so important to the future of Jerusalem. And so, even as we are telling the story of the rise of Herod, we pause for one day in order to introduce the patriarch of the most important rabbinic dynasty in Jewish history. According to the Babylonian Talmud, even many years after arriving in the Holy Land, Hillel was known as the Babylonian, which means that, despite being a descendant of David, he was, until assuming leadership, an outsider. He was, moreover, as a young man, destitute. Thus, an anecdote in the Talmud about Hillel that is almost as famous as the tale of teaching the Torah on one foot describes the young Babylonian Torah student finding it hard to put together the requisite funds, a half of a coin called a tropek, to pay the security guard that stood at the door of the study hall that Hillel wished to attend. Here is the text, in one translation, of the short story in the Talmud. Let us focus carefully on its language. Quote, "It was reported about Hillel the elder that every day he used to work and earn one tropek, half of which he would give to the guard at the house of learning, the other half being spent for his food and for that of his family. One day he found nothing to earn, and the guard at the house of learning would not permit him to enter. He climbed up and sat upon the window to hear the words of the living God from the mouth of Shemaiah and Avtalion. They say that day was the eve of Sabbath in the winter solstice, and snow fell down upon him from heaven. When the dawn rose, Shemaiah said to Avtalion, brother of Talion. On every day this house is light, and today it is dark. It is perhaps a cloudy day. They looked up and saw the figure of a man in the window. They went up and found him covered by 3 cubits of snow. They removed him, bathed and anointed him, and placed him opposite the fire. And they said, "This man deserves that the Sabbath be profaned on his behalf." End quote. On the face of it, the story is a strange one for many reasons. Why would money be required for a guard at the study hall? Why is there even a guard at the study hall? Why is it important that the story took place during the winter solstice? What are we to make of the fact that snow fell in an abnormally large way? In my own hometown, the Arctic area known as Chicago, Illinois, snow could easily cover a man. But snow such as this in Jerusalem is extremely rare. And the Sabbath is violated to save any life. What then do the rabbis in this story mean when they say that Hillel was worthy of having the Sabbath violated on his behalf? Stories in the Talmud, known as Agadah, can be read literally or symbolically, and this story can indeed be both literal and symbolic, for the literary language used by the Talmud is teaching us something profound, not only about Hillel, but also about the age in Jerusalem in which he began to emerge. And it is precisely through the earlier episodes of our podcast that we can perhaps see how this is so. We begin with the fact that funds were necessary to enter the study hall where Torah was taught. Funds apparently required in order to fund the guard at the door. Modern writers on Talmudic tales find this enormously bothersome, but perhaps all that we have seen allows us to explain why in this moment funding a guard might have been necessary, and why this detail might reflect the precarious situation in which the sages found themselves. After all, at this moment, the sages of Israel knew there was a Herod who hated the Sanhedrin, and we know that Herod ultimately attacked the Sanhedrin. It is a dangerous and terrifying time. And the guard, apparently collectively funded by all the participants in the study hall, is seemingly described as collectively funded by all the participants in the study hall, apparently reflects the precarious nature of the sage's existence. If the story of Hillel unfolded during this terrifying period, we are now able to appreciate that this tale of Hillel in the Talmud, as Yonatan Feintuch points out, is filled with literary allusion that compares the study hall he attended to the temple in Jerusalem, and indeed, Hillel to the high priest. Thus, on every Yom Kippur in the temple, the high priest began at dawn by immersing in a ritual bath atop the temple roof. And here Hillel's body is described as surrounded on the window, which is really a skylight on the roof, by 3 cubits of snow, 3 cubits being an allusion to the requisite amount of water required for a ritual bath. One can also add that in the story, Hillel was then warmed before the fire on the floor of the House of Learning. And we know from the Mishnah, the young priests in the temple would sleep on the floor of the temple in what was called a fire chamber with a large flame burning to keep them warm. What are we to make of these allusions connecting the study hall to the temple, Hillel to the high priest? Remember Semaias' words before the Sanhedrin, noting how the weakness of the high priest Hyrcanus, who was supposedly also the political leader of Jerusalem, had allowed for Herod's rise. Semaias' point was clear. Genuine leadership was not to be found in the temple, was not to be found in the high priest. The literary allusions in the Talmud connecting study hall and temple are perhaps intended to teach us that precisely at the time when leadership in the temple was lacking, one of the greatest leaders in the Torah Academy made his appearance. At the time when the high priest was a weak leader, offering no spiritual guidance, a young man studied Torah in the house of learning and became a strong leader. Where leadership lacked in the temple, it was found in the circle of those that studied Torah. And it is precisely because of the rise of Hillel as leader that when the temple would be terribly and tragically destroyed, it would be the Torah schools and the sages who ministered therein that would ensure that Judaism would continue. The other details of the story, which can also indeed be literal, also emerge as resplendently symbolically profound, and they all hint back to the Hasmoneans. As Hillel studied the Torah in the skylight, a massive snowstorm struck Jerusalem. And we know, ladies and gentlemen, the last important time in Jerusalem's history that an abnormally large snowstorm occurred during the leadership of the last great Maccabee, Shimon, son of Mattathias, the snowstorm that saved Jerusalem from the attack of Hellenist forces. We know further that the Hellenists chose more than once to deliberately attack on the Shabbat, and that the Maccabees famously declared that they would fight on the Sabbath when necessary. They would violate the Sabbath when required to protect themselves. Thus, for the Talmud to speak of an abnormally large snowstorm in Jerusalem, and for the rabbis to say that Hillel was worthy of having the Sabbath violated for him, is for the Talmud to communicate that the age of the Hasmoneans had come to a close and their glory had been transferred to another house. The last saviors of Israel were the Hasmoneans, but their spiritual greatness had petered out generations before. The next great hope appeared in the house of Hillel, the teachers of Torah. And if he was first discovered during the winter solstice, the very same time the original Chanukah miracle occurred, then we realized suddenly that in a very real way, at a time when the Hasmoneans did not provide spiritual sustenance to the Jews of Judea in the age of the rise of Herod, it was the coming of Hillel that would prove the salvation of Judaism's future. We will tell later the story of Hillel's assumption of leadership, but we can note for now that the famed humility of Hillel and his students inspired the Talmud to comment on why so much of Jewish law comes from them. Quote, "This teaches you that whoever humbles himself, the Holy One, blessed be He, raises up, and he who exalts himself, the Holy One, blessed be He, humbles him. Greatness flees from those who seek it and pursues those who flee it." End quote. Today, Herod is often called Herod the Great in historical accounts, but he is not called Herod the Great in the Talmud. Herod, as we shall see, had certain achievements, but he lacked any of the spiritual or moral qualities necessary for greatness, and he committed too many moral horrors to ever approximate greatness for the Talmud. Meanwhile, Hillel became great indeed, reflecting a greatness that went hand in hand with his humility, and indeed was founded upon it. His rise to greatness allowed him to serve as a guide to those loyal to the Torah in the trying times of the Roman era. And today, Hillel guides us still. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.